Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, before we talk to Cliff Schechter, let's talk about our Amazon link for the holidays at bobseska.com. Whether you're shopping for yourself or if you're buying music by one of our excellent indie bands, or if you're getting a jump on your holiday shopping without leaving your house, don't forget to use our Amazon link just beneath the logo at bobseska.com. Our special link will take you to the front page of amazon.com where you can go shopping until you're dropping, and by doing so through our link, we receive a teeny tiny commission on some of your purchases. Thanks for shopping through our Amazon link, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, November 11, 2020, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest today is a returning favorite and a friend of the show. The great Cliff Schechter is here. Cliff is the co-host of the Unprecedented Podcast on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, along with such shows as this one, sexyliberal.com. And of course, he's one of the smartest, most badass Democrats I know. Make sure to follow Cliff on Twitter at Cliff Schechter. That is S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. And support his Patreon page at patreon.com/unprecedentedpod. Links in the description. Okay, let's talk about the election and what's next for the Republic with the great Cliff Schechter. I don't know if you saw this yet today, but Charlie Kirk tweeted just a few minutes ago. He said, "I wonder why President-elect Joe Biden called a lid at 12:17 p.m. today on a Monday." Right as Georgia announces a hand recount of their votes. Charlie Kirk thinks it's still Monday, Cliff. And then yesterday, Eric Trump tweeted out a reminder to everyone to make sure to go and vote on November 10th. Like, no wonder they lost. They don't even know what day of the week it is, for Christ's sake.
I say, it's kind of an improvement for most of them, because most of them still think it's 1880. So in some ways... if they're only a couple days behind, I suppose we're really moving up there, aren't we?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, my God. So did you see Donald Trump at Arlington Cemetery today? Apparently, he showed up late, leaving soldiers, leaving observers, standing there in the rain, and then didn't actually carry the wreath to the tomb. He just walked up and groped the wreath as it was just sitting there. He just reached out and touched it like he was... you know, moving on it like a bitch. And so, like, holy shit, this is what he does. His first appearance in public after that shit show last week on election night, the first time he shows up in public, he goes up and gropes a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. How about that?
Wow, I guess he couldn't find any other ladies in close enough proximity. He's also never learned how to, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal. And if he did the big things right, which, of course, he's terrible at those, he's terrible at everything. Mm-hmm. But, like, just these little things that show you actually care about being president. Yeah. For example, you don't salute, you know, at the tomb right there. What you do is you put your hand on your heart. Every other president has taken the 5 seconds or a second and a half it requires to learn that. Mm-hmm. And yet, nope, he's still doing it the wrong way on his final time before we kick his ass out of office.
Right,
so I I can't loathe him enough. We had our friend on my podcast today. Unprecedented, everyone.
Sorry, yes. To do that. That's on the Sexy Liberal Podcast hard. Network, sexyliberal.com. It's your podcast superstation. Thank you very much.
All right. Well done, Bob. You're better than I am at this stuff.
I try.
You can see where Bob's a longtime radio pro here, and I'm just some schmo. But we had Mary Trump on today, who I know you had on.
Oh, hey.
She's awesome. I didn't know, I kind of got to know her about a year ago. All these weird coincidences that her aunt went to the same, and actually Donald himself went to the same school as my mom did in Queens way back when and all this stuff. And
so
we hit it off and she came on our show and then, about whenever her book came out a while back and then she came out today and she's just awesome. And so we were talking about all of this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And it's like the little things, the big things, how is it that 70 whatever million people voted for this person? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Our democracy, people are scared of a coup. Mm. And I'm not saying we don't have to be very vigilant. Of course we do.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what's going on here right now, because I don't think he has the support, quite frankly.
No.
But my God, if they damage the guardrails are such that, you know how this is going to go in the future, right? Like, no Republicans are going to concede ever again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Every election is going to go like this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's been one of the many, many damaging things throughout the last 4 years. Donald Trump has no respect for the traditions of the office, no respect for norms and so on. The same things that we've been repeating. And I find it so utterly frustrating that there are still people out there going, oh, yeah, he'll eventually figure it out and he'll concede. No, he's never going to pivot. He's never going to pivot. It's never going to happen, is it?
Today, Donald Trump became president. Where's Van Jones?
Yeah, exactly right. Wouldn't be surprised if he was the first one out of the box to say, yes, Donald Trump will eventually pivot to a concession, then he'll invite Joe Biden to the White House, and Melania will have Jill Biden over, and they'll talk about things. And no, it's not going to happen. And Mary Trump says it best in terms of Donald Trump's psychology. He's not wired for concession. It's impossible. He can't physically do it. Lawrence O'Donnell added to it, it's like asking Donald Trump to run the New York Marathon. He can't physically do it.
Asking a monkey to drive a car. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's beyond his intellectual capacity. It's beyond his emotional capacity. That's what gets me. I mean, again, this is the stuff that when you see me periodically lose it on various, I try not to make it personal, with individuals, but I get really angry at like the New York Times and others when the mainstream media pulls this kind of crap. You know, it's a matter of like, you don't even need insight into Donald Trump. You just need insight into human nature. Like, with very few exceptions, unless something huge and life-changing happens and you're like, oh my God, I almost died and I have to, people don't change. I mean, they may mature and sort of get a little better over life, though Donald Trump's never shown any ability to do that. But like, I just couldn't stand the sort of purposeful stupidity of having to play dumb as a reporter. Like you just woke up yesterday after like a 20-year nap and you don't know any better. Like, well, maybe he'll change. Maybe he'll say something magnanimous.
Right.
Maybe he'll do the right thing. I mean, this is somebody who's never done any of these things.
Yeah.
Of course he's not. So you have to separate that from whether he can pull off a coup. I think that there's enough of the retired and current military brass, as well as the spooks and the CIA and other people, that would stand up and not allow that to happen. And I worry about it less because of that. If I felt like he had the support to do it, I actually would worry about it, because I know he would do it if he could. But you got to separate from what you think he can get away with from what you know he would do. He's not going to concede. He's not going to say anything gracious to the Bidens. He's not. Of course he's not. Like, why pretend he could?
Well, his whole thing, Cliff, is about the Trump brand. In fact, the entire business model of the Trump Organization is not real estate. It's branding. It's all about the Trump name. It's all about the hair and the orange makeup and the ill-fitting suits and the obnoxiousness on Twitter. It's all part of a thing. The nouveau riche gold plate penthouse, the Liberace nightmare at the top of Trump Tower. These are the things that sell Donald Trump. These are the things that make him whatever money he's got, whatever money his family has. So therefore, the one thing you can never expect from him, the one thing that you should never expect from him, is for him to change his brand. And his brand is not accepting defeat. And he'll spend the rest of his life insisting that he won this election.
Well, I mean, that's the biggest problem is that, look, 79% are saying Biden is a legitimate president, including over half of Republicans. I mean, they're the ones bringing it down to 79%. That should be 98 or whatever percent it should be, right? But what they've done is they've made it so that there's enough people that doubt this, enough among the deplorables, as Hillary so accurately said. Mm-hmm. And the problem with all of that is, as you just, you know, we're talking about, which is that, you know, overall a majority of Americans support sanity.
Yeah.
But you've got one of our two major political parties that gets to nominate somebody for president. And now, every single time there is an election that big, and frankly, every state, you know, that nominates a governor, with a few exceptions, a Larry Hogan or a Charlie Baker here and there in more liberal states where they may have some sort of sane Republicans, I would even argue, as much as I don't like him, Mike DeWine here at least is on the conservative end of sane, you know, as Republicans go. But the vast majority of these people are going to be people that come from the very same mindset of it's all just branding.
Yeah.
They don't believe in governing. They have absolutely no solutions to any of your problems, whatever they may be. They're not going to offer any. They're going to tell you that it's infrastructure week next week constantly. They're going to tell you they've got their own healthcare plan to cover people with pre-existing conditions for 8 years and not have it. You know, their taxes are always going to be getting audited, so they can't release them for you to see them. I mean, this is what we're looking at.
Yep.
You know, and that's the bigger problem is what he's done long term here.
And obviously, it's kind of impossible to expect some sort of reconciliation with these people. I mean, obviously, they are stuck in this, whether they want to be or not. And I think they do want to be. But there's going to be no level of outreach that's going to change any dynamics of any election moving forward. You know, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris going into the diners and talking to the diner people, the white guys and wherever, upper Wisconsin or the upper peninsula of Michigan, it's never going to happen. So it seems to me, and I'd love to get your take on this, that the only real way forward is to have the Democratic Party continue to register new voters and to continue to get those voters out. I mean, obviously register them as Democrats, get those voters out to their polling places, get them the mail-in ballots that they need every time we do this, to expand the voting base of the Democratic Party, just feeding upon those people who didn't vote before. I mean, we look at this past election, 13% of voters in this election were first timers, and 66% of those first timers voted for Joe Biden. I think we need more of that, right?
Absolutely. And look, the trends are continuing. There were people we didn't do as well in the House races and others in this race. A lot of the dynamics were around Trump. And I think there were a number of kind of people moving away from the Republican Party, but didn't move away enough. So they felt like, well, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. And their guilt at being a Republican made them then vote for their House or Senate member who was a Republican to kind of alleviate their tribalism. I'm hoping that some of those folks keep coming along in the future. Trends say they will, especially as the Republican Party inevitably gets worse. And I know you don't believe they can, you being one, but they will. I mean, believe it or not, it'll keep it going in this. I mean, now you have to accept as an article of faith that Joe Biden stole the election, or you're not going to be able to win a Republican primary in at least 2/3 of the states in this country, a whole lot of localities, and for president.
That's right.
You know, and like that's what we're going to have going on. So I mean, you know, that we have to just accept that we've got to turn out newer voters. They're going to offend more and more people in the middle. We have to welcome them in with open arms. Mm. Doesn't mean like we say, you now get to make all the rules, you know, Lincoln Project or whatever. But it also means you don't say F you Lincoln Project like some people on the far left are doing.
Right.
Like big tent coalition, stick up for our values and what we believe in and invite people to join us who believe in democracy. You know, I don't know why you can't do all of that at once.
Yeah, I think that's where you can really apply some civility. I think you need to apply some civility in this big tent portion of our political spectrum here. The Democratic Party that now includes some, you know, moderate conservatives, the, as you said, the Never Trumper crowd, the Lincoln Project crowd, all the way down to the Elizabeth Warren left. All of these people have to play nice moving forward because the paradigm has changed. The way we approach elections strategically, I mean, has to, because we're no longer in that period of time that you and I still remember, Cliff, where if the Republicans won, Well, it wasn't going to be an existential crisis for the United States. You know, if the other guys got in, yeah, we'd have to, you know, grit our teeth and power through some shitty policy agendas. But beyond that, we weren't going to have to worry about the system falling apart.
Right. Bob Dole was going to yell about his chair, but he wasn't right. going to blow the country up.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you would get not the kind of policies you wanted. You might even get a couple of good ones here and there. You know, I mean, look, there are even a couple of things that if they'd been carried out right and George W. Bush had been more competent, I would have been in favor of the No Child Left Behind, putting more money into education.
Oh, yeah.
If it had been done right, I would have been all for it. The problem is they did things in a half-assed way no matter what they did. So it wasn't that all of their instincts were bad, but we're no longer there.
Yeah.
Every single worst instinct, again, as people point out again and again, you know, a big point of what they do is cruelty. That's what fascism is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's based on the fasces, right? The sticks and the fist.
Yep.
It's based on crushing your opposition. It's based on humiliating them, pounding them into the ground. And I think that's a lot of what we see among, you know, why Trump has this sort of hold on white working class men particularly, but even other men, and we need to be honest about this, and sorry if people get upset, but he won a bigger share of Latino men. He won a bigger share of African-American men. There's just this misogyny that appeals. It's white men are the worst, especially in this country, certainly, but it appeals to other men too. That this you sort of called it way back when I think you just started basically regularly calling him Biff, because, you know, Biff Tannen from, you know, Back to the Future 2 was based on what they thought a Donald Trump as sort of a leader, you know, a president type figure would look like. And it was exactly right.
Yeah.
It was like this trashy, you know, guy with the wife with the fake breasts, and like he's cheating on her with four girls and the hot women in the hot tub. And, you know, he's completely corrupt. He's completely violent. He's vicious. He's completely like gauche and has, you know, the worst haircut, and the worst clothes. And for some reason that appeals to this segment. And I may offend people, but I don't care. It's like, you know, jukebox hero. It's white trash hero.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like white trash hero. This is because they all feel as powerless as Donald Trump feels like inside. And they seem to look at him and say he made it.
Yeah, there's an immense amount of tribalism surrounding toxic masculinity. And it's kind of shocking. We've really seen this in the past two elections, certainly 2016, certainly this election, too. And it's really bizarre to see that kind of hero worship, that kind of defensiveness, that kind of wagon circling around someone who is soft, delicate, weak, impotent. I mean, that's the thing I think that confuses a lot of people as we observe Donald Trump in his final days, that so many people, 70 million people, and whatever percentage of those 70 million are men going, yeah, he's a manly man. He's a guy's guy. When we all the rest of us know that he's absolutely not those things.
Bone spurred, Kentucky Fried Chicken wing slurping. Like, I mean, you know it. Like, again, remember, so here's the key part, right? You bring up that, you brought up, and I've always thought that was a brilliant thing when you were, you know, calling him Biff and, you know, making that connection clear. But remember when they change things and they go back and Biff's like the weak guy washing their car, like, please don't hurt me. That's who they knew it in that movie. That's who Donald Trump really is. That's underneath.
Yep.
The stuff on the top is all an act. And you have all these working class white men who feel disempowered largely because of Republican policies. Yes, Democrats are responsible for some of this too, especially in the 80s and 90s. I'm not going to deny it. But the Republicans still believe in all this garbage where, you know, don't take care of anybody in any of these towns that are dying. Don't give them free broadband. Don't give people guaranteed health care. Don't try to provide job training so they can find other jobs and education. Get them in debt. Screw them. And so they feel powerless, and they look at Donald Trump and they believe this bullshit story that was told by, you know, the apprentice, that he's this guy that rose from the ashes and became this tough boss who ran things, you know, and you know, he grabbed those women's asses when they walked in front of him because he could do that because he's that kind of guy, and he'd fire people who weren't living up to him. And sadly, it seems, we have to be honest, a lot of these guys, that's their dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Is to become that guy. That's powerful to them. The gold shitter and the wife who formerly posed naked as a model. Like, this is what they want.
Yeah, it's twisted.
And it really is.
Yeah.
There's no way to get to it without psychology.
So what do you make of all the firings and resignations over at DOJ and Department of Defense, the Pentagon? Are you alarmed? Are you unconcerned? Is this just them pretending to engage in a transition to a second term, you know, just to assuage the giant baby? Or what's going on? I mean, a lot of talk of a coup attempt of some sort. What do you think?
So as I was saying like earlier, I think Donald Trump left his own devices if he had the support and the power. Absolutely. He's no respect for the United States of America, never has, never will. He's no respect for anything. Of course, if he thought he'd get away with a coup, he mm-hmm. would.
Yeah.
But that's not what I think is going on here, because I don't think that there would ever be enough support for him from the people that matter to be able to make that happen, because all of them loathe him.
Right.
And seemingly, whatever we want to say about, you know, like I'll say, seeing a lot of the generals and admirals and members of the CIA or former head, you know, top CIA folks speaking out for democracy kind of in a way reinvigorates you and reminds you that we're not kind of where we were 30, 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these folks are steeped in democracy, care about diversity, care about these things. And it's kind of been, that's one nice thing to be able to see that. You know, because there's of course the Curtis LeMay and other type stereotype of these guys who just wanted to bomb everything from the 60s, you know, and a lot of that was based on truth. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is, and I think this is a legitimate, serious worry, is so you're, you know, what did Donald Trump do? What we already know he did, or and Jared Kushner and this whole gang. We know that Qatar bailed out Jared Kushner and they were threatening policy. And that'll all, I mean, it seems obvious enough that'll all come out. We know that Donald Trump was negotiating a Trump Tower Moscow and was trading policy for it, like, mm-hmm. you know, backing out with the RNC platform on what we had to say about the sovereignty of Ukraine and other countries. We know he's willing to trade secrets and policies and all sorts of things. So you're Donald Trump. What is it? $900 million is coming due. Yeah. In the next however many years, you've got a Defense Department, right, mm-hmm. right, with all sorts of secrets there.
Yeah.
All sorts of military secrets, military technologies. And you're in a position for two more months. You've fired most of the inspector generals and that kind of thing. That if you can put your cronies, and he's put these Devin Nunes, Michael Flynn, treasonous types, you know, tried to cover up Ukraine and Russia and all these other scandals. He's put them in positions there. Well, you know, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. I mean, remember when he first came in, he was talking about getting Saudi Arabia nuclear technology and everyone balked and there was huge. I mean, like, we were all like, are you fucking crazy? Jeez. I have no doubt in my mind that that was based on a deal of some sort, a financial mm-hmm. deal
yeah.
for him.
Yeah.
Well, he just fired the guy that watches over our nuclear technology in the Defense Department while also firing other people.
God,
that's what scares me. Is that I don't think he's gonna. I'm not worried about a coup. I'm worried that within a year we're gonna learn that Saudi Arabia has nuclear technology or less, and that it's because of Donald Trump.
Unbelievable.
I'm worried. Right. I'm worried that he's gonna trade, God knows what secrets, sell out agents, sell out, you know, military bases, who knows what else, and get people killed.
Yeah.
Good people serving their country. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I sincerely hope that there are people inside the bureaucracy, at least, who are saving the documents, saving some sort of paper trail if this actually ends up going down. If he is actually selling off state secrets, if he's selling off nuclear technology to these rogue states, places like Saudi Arabia and so on, if this actually happens, we should at least have some kind of record of it preserved so he can be prosecuted, because that is, what is that? That's sedition. I mean, he's selling top secret technology potentially to some foreign nation who could end up being hostile to the United States. This isn't about some kind of branch of our foreign policy. This is about enriching Donald Trump, and he's selling it off so he can finance whatever bullshit he's going to do after he's done being president. So it's insane. And, you know, it occurred to me, Cliff, the other day that Trump can still be prosecuted for the Ukraine quid pro quo, his attempt to cheat in this election, after he leaves office. I mean, there's an OLC memo from DOJ dating back, I think it was 2000 or 2001, saying, yep, this is entirely possible. I mean, do you think a U.S. attorney is going to pick this up and run with it, and maybe even the obstruction of justice charges and the Mueller report. I mean, what do you think the scope of the potential prosecutions will be, and is there any limit? I mean, are we looking at a stack of them? Are we looking at them just kind of limiting it to a couple of things, sort of like Capone, or how is this going to go down?
Well, the only limit is our imagination, Bob.
yeah, it's very Willy Wonka of you. Yeah.
Yeah, I try. So it's interesting what you bring up about that. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I haven't served in that capacity ever in the government. And mm-hmm. so I'm not sure, like, I still am concerned, you know, about can he pardon himself from all of that and what the legal bearing that is. I'm not smart enough on these things to be able to argue. I mean, I've heard arguments that the presidents do not have self-pardoning power, but then, you know, I've heard arguments they can get away with it. And, you know, that's where Donald Trump lives, in that gray area.
Yeah.
But even, let's say he were, for Ukraine, Russia, all the other stuff, there's so many crimes that have been committed in so many jurisdictions where he cannot, as we know, he cannot pardon himself for state crimes.
Mm-hmm.
His Ponzi scheme foundation, the various money laundering crimes through banks, you know, many of which are based in New York City. New York has a tremendous amount of jurisdiction over crimes the Trump family has committed, enough to probably put them all away for their entire lives, if not many lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start going to other jurisdictions too, you know, where he's got his, I promise you start going, there was tax and other kinds of fraud. If I'm remembering correctly, it was the one in New Jersey, it was the property in Virginia. Well, Virginia is a Democratic state, by the way, so is New Jersey at this point. They'll have Democratic attorneys general. Maryland, which where some of his stuff, some of his properties are, the District of Columbia, where Trump Tower is, his Trump Tower, in Chicago, where mm-hmm. everyone was out celebrating, you know, giving a big middle finger after we won the other day.
Yeah.
If you saw some of the stuff on CNN and whatever. Right. I mean, he has a lot of these places where the criminality has taken place, whether it's criminality while he's been in government or not been in government, are in all sorts of jurisdictions where we've got Democratic either, you know, city attorneys, attorneys general. So, no, I mean, I think it would be frankly shocking to me and a crime if they were not to follow up and prosecute him, because my guess is it's all over the place. The man's never covered his tracks well, because mm-hmm. he's never thought he had to. He's too stupid. He's too lazy. But he's also like, he's too arrogant.
Yeah.
And figured, you know, no one's ever made him pay for any of this stuff. And if they did, like Trump University, he pays $25 million and it goes away. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think this could be different. This should be different. It's, again, another reason why I think some of the state secrets and things, why I worry right now, why I worry about the nuclear technology, because, you know, if you're a Trump and you need to run out of the country and go somewhere where they're not going to be able to yank your ass back here, where there's no extradition treaty, Riyadh mm-hmm. would seem like a likely place with its palaces and its bullshit. I mean, he can live in the same gold-plated garbage there he lives in here.
Yeah, exactly. That seems exactly right.
Idi Amin lived out his days, Bob. Just, you know, a little thing from history.
Yeah.
Once Idi Amin got chased after out of Uganda for murdering however many people. I mean, it's not, you know, it's where Bin Laden spent a lot of his time. I mean, Saudi Arabia is an unusual place for vicious strongmen to end up living. So that's my concern. If we don't end up getting prosecuted, my guess is it's because he and his family have successfully gotten out of the country.
Yeah, there's the other possibility that I've been kind of thinking about too, which is that he's going to try to engage in some sort of pardon fuckery with himself. Now, I mean, obviously he's going to pardon a bunch of other people. That's a fact. But I think he's going to try to at least pardon himself. And there's one or two ways he's going to actually go about it. One, he's just going to try to do it himself. He's just going to try to issue a pardon for Donald J. Trump. The other way is to temporarily resign from office, let Mike Pence come in, pardon Donald Trump, and then resume being president up until January 20th. Now, both options will be challenged legally because they're clearly for nefarious intent, which I think limits the pardon power of the president. So I wonder which way he's going to go. But the other thing interesting about either of those scenarios is it admits defeat. It admits that he's going to be leaving office on January 20th. So it's kind of, there's a teeny tiny silver lining to the possibility of him pardoning himself. It's going to be a confession that he lost the election. A concession, really.
Right. Well, we should take that as a concession and put it on TV. Like, thank you for conceding. Make sure to like put ads up on Fox. It's a Lincoln Project kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but he would immediately retract then, wouldn't he? If he found out that it was kind of him admitting that he lost.
It's like the Code Red thing. You know, I ordered the Code Red.
Yeah, right.
That.
Right.
Like, I'm not pardoning myself. Damn it. But again, it doesn't get to the point of the states.
Yeah.
The only thing he can do when it comes to the states that I can think of, and you know, please tell me if you can think of other things, is he can try to use federal power before he leaves to threaten various folks in states, threaten their families. Let's say it's Letitia James, mm-hmm. and he thinks he has something on a brother or somebody,
yeah.
you know, and tries to make nefarious deals with people not to pursue prosecution of it. I mean, what else can he do? He can't pardon himself. So it's only if he has leverage mm-hmm. in some way that he can use to get various state actors to not do it. Otherwise, I don't know of anything else he can do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know? I'm looking forward to what goes down with Letitia James, by the way, since you mentioned her, because while her current investigations, her current prosecution of Trump in New York State is a serious deal, the fact of the matter is that the current path that she's taking isn't one that will result in prison. If she's successful, and she's been successful so far with this shit, she's going to end up shutting down the Trump Organization. That's pretty miraculous. That'll be a pretty interesting thing to see that go down. And again, nothing that he does or doesn't do is going to change that. I mean, considering that she got Trump University shut down, she got, I think that was her. She certainly got the Trump Foundation right. shut down. I know that for a fact. And now the Trump Organization is on the chopping block. And there's really nothing you can do about that.
It's pretty impressive resume build.
Yes, it absolutely is. Yeah, yeah. And so I think knowing this, I hope some of the prosecutions do end up being criminal indictments rather than just civil indictments. So that's what I've been looking at as well.
Well, I mean, the money laundering stuff and all of that, I mean, that went through New York banks. Like, how can that not be criminal? I'll be angry if they try to let him out on any kind of a civil, because again, you know, in a civil procedure, because he can find ways to generate money.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. Again, yeah. he'll sell secrets or Jesus Christ. I mean, he's so pathetic that, you know, in a lot of these countries now, he's famous enough. I'm sure they'll do like appearance fees.
Yeah.
You know, like meet Don Jr., you know, in the alley behind the slop club, you know, in some fucking like hole in Bangkok somewhere. And they'll like, no, for 400 Thai baht or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, you know that's their future, and so they can generate revenue as much as I want to rip them. And so money's not enough. Like there needs to be criminal time to the point where they're either in jail or their only reason they're not in jail is they fled this country, and that still sucks, but at least we're through with them.
Yeah. One thing I'm looking forward to, Cliff, remember that picture of Mitt Romney right after the 2012 election where he's filling gas and his hair is kind of disheveled? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing, that kind of picture, but with Trump in it, like some sort of sad sack photograph that kind of emphasizes the agony of defeat. I mean, there's something so immensely satisfying about watching this bully crash and burn. That's why I'm not overly freaking out about all of these weird things that he's doing during the transition, because I find it so entertaining seeing this unforgivable rat bastard finally getting his comeuppance and knowing that it's endgame for him. There's nothing he can do to wiggle out of this. I mean, yeah, he can try some fuckery with pardons or whatever, but he cannot remain president. There is no path for him whatsoever. And given the way he's behaved, all of this bullshit about how he's the greatest and he's always winning and that's his brand, it's such a beautiful thing to see that falling apart, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? And again, Mary Trump was saying today, the best thing to use against someone like him is mockery,
mm-hmm.
because it's the worst, which we, you know, we've thought for a while is, you know, that gets to him in a way because he's so insecure. I mean, there's so much of it.
Yeah.
To use. I mean, again, like he has for any, you know, right now, for any challenger taking on an incumbent president, Joe Biden has won the largest share of the vote since FDR in 1930. Mm-hmm. He just passed Ronald Reagan.
Right.
In his share of the vote, you know, more than that, Donald Trump is one of three incumbents, you know, to lose an election in almost 100 years. He's the only one to lose the popular vote twice. He's the only one to be impeached. you know, and I mean, like, the just the shame on top of shame.
Yeah, exactly.
Is you know, that you that needs to be heaped upon him.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I would do.
And no one's really put this together yet, but someone's got to make a super cut, a super edit video of all the times Trump spent busting on Joe Biden at his rallies, saying that he's the worst candidate in the world. And if I ever lose to this horrible, horrible Democrat, that I'm just never going to be here again. I'm never going to see you again. I'm just going to disappear. And actually, now that I think about it, he's kind of doing that. Donald Trump is kind of disappearing. I mean, there hasn't been a chopper talk. There hasn't been anything. A press gaggle in the Oval. None of that has actually happened. So maybe what we're seeing here is the disappearance of Donald Trump, making good on that promise to vanish from public view. I love it so much.
Well, you know it. And you know he wants to be out there. He craves the attention and all that. But at the same time, clearly, he's so damaged, and, you know, losing an election in that fashion would be difficult for anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, a normal human losing a presidential election, you know, whatever, you know, or whatever it is in your life is sort of the highest kind of, you know, goal that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And having that happen to you very publicly,
yeah,
you know, losing it has got to be absolutely awful.
Right.
But for him, you know, it's a whole nother level from, you know, what Al Gore or Mitt Romney or John Kerry or folks like that went through. Because, again, like, they're relatively complete human beings, whether you like any all of them or not.
Yeah.
You know, who have a relative at least sense of themselves and sense of what matters in life and whatever. You know, I mean, I'm not a big lover of Mitt Romney, but he seems to actually care about his family, you know, and he's been successful in business, I'd argue, in the shittiest form of business.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so there are some of the, even these other folks are people that have all had other accomplishments, other things that make them whole.
Yeah.
Donald Trump will never be whole. And like this just, I think, will tear at him even that much worse.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I you know, after LBJ pulled out of the election, you know, and did not run for re-election in 68, you know, he died by 73.
Oh, yeah. He was gone. I mean, yeah. You know, within just a few years. It was kind of amazing to go back and see that history and know that he just faded away that rapidly.
He did, and died because the hey LBJ, how many kids did you kill? All the Vietnam stuff took its toll. Mm-hmm. McCarthy ended up, you know, going away into alcoholism and dying young too. Just to give you examples of people who've sort of disappeared from public life in somewhat ignominious ways. I mean, I'm not comparing the two because obviously in Vietnam LBJ was horrible. In domestic policy, he may have even surpassed FDR.
Yeah.
So at least there was a positive to what LBJ accomplished in our country.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just sort of making the point about people that disappear in kind of this, you know, in this depressed, you know, kind of way where they don't, you know, they don't know what to do with themselves, especially losing that way when you don't have a sense of yourself. I mean, I could see Donald Trump. Everybody's like, he's going to run again in 2024. I mean, quite honestly, I can see him not being alive anymore in 2024.
that's a very real possibility.
I'm not saying to be a dick, but I mean, like, he's had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
He has, you know, he already, you could see in those, you know, the doctors be like, he's fit like bull. He is strongest human ever. And like, and you can look at the medical chart, you'd be like, that shows heart disease. I mean, I'd be a doctor, but I can look at that and see that shows he has heart disease. I mean, he eats terribly, doesn't exercise, he's stressed ridiculously, you know, he's rages all the time, you know, like a child. I mean, I think it's, you know, believable that a man of his age and his shape may not, you know, and now he's gonna have to go through this depression. So no, I do think you think he's going to disappear in a horribly embarrassing way. And again, may have to actually run out of the country.
Yeah. And all of his disciples threatened to disappear. I mean, you know, in fact, it's not just his disciples, because we saw this in 2009 when Barack Obama first ascended to the presidency. You saw this movement occur. I think Michelle Malkin was involved in it too. This kind of I am John Galt thing where they were planning on pulling themselves out of the American economy and kind of forming their own Gulch, you know, from what is it? Atlas Shrugged. Is that the the Ayn Rand book with Gulch? Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what they were planning on doing. And I noticed that Dinesh D'Ushbag yesterday was threatening the same thing. We should all Trump supporters should withdraw from the United States, and we should not participate in the economy and participate in the politics anymore. And then today, this Mississippi Republican, Price Wallace, said that Mississippi should secede from the union, which he didn't even get the word. Yeah.
Years taking our tax money.
That's right. But he couldn't even get the word right. He couldn't even land on secede. He said succeed from the union.
It's very grand to be completely stupid about politics and English at the same time.
That's so right.
Hat tip there.
But from a practicality point of view, Mississippi's economy is 48th in the United States. It's 50th in healthcare, 45th in infrastructure, 44th in fiscal sustainability. Now imagine if they actually succeeded and left the union, they would lose all of that federal aid and it would just become one big homeless crisis in Mississippi. It would just be an economic disaster for everyone there.
I mean, I said something out the other day to make fun of the senator from Indiana, Braun, or whatever his name is, which sounds about right. It is Braun, Eva, I'm sure, Eva. And he's like, well, if you take California out, then the popular vote was equal, which I don't even know if that's true. Probably, but like, I was like, why, yes, if you take out the state with 1/8 of our population in the United States, with the 5th largest economy in the world on its own.
Yeah.
You know, where 2 of the last 5 Republican presidents come from, too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about if we take out Indiana from the union, and then the Democrats will have a majority in the Senate right now?
That's right.
Can we do that? I mean, the point is that, look, all the places where people create anything in this country, for the most part, of value are our places. Mm-hmm. Are there exceptions? Absolutely. But it's not even just about states, okay? I live in sadly what is a lean red state. I was hoping for the best for us to go blue this year, but we didn't. We didn't have a state Supreme Court seat, so that was something. In Ohio, of course, but where in Ohio is everything produced? Where is Procter & Gamble, which gave you your most basic soap first before anything else? There's this huge company marketing and advertising behemoth. Well, it's in Cincinnati, of course. Where's the Limited, the clothing brand and all this sort of stuff in Columbus? Mm-hmm. If you go through all this stuff, where's Progressive Insurance in Cleveland? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not out in bumfuck in the middle of nowhere. even in Republican, where the Republicans sadly have the numbers because of rural areas and exurban areas in states, where all the economic activity is going on is where we are, which is why all these right-wing assholes who scream and yell and complain in the media complex, why isn't Fox News, based in sort of woebegone? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, why isn't Rush Limbaugh, why does he live in Miami?
Yeah.
Why doesn't he live in somewhere on the panhandle of Florida?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like they all scream and yell about liberal culture, this and liberal. It's liberal culture of tolerance, diversity, promotion and acceptance of different ideas. Gee, what a crazy idea in business, right?
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. It leads to the creativity. It leads to brilliant companies, brilliant creative works of art, whether they be film and television and literature. And I mean, this is why they all choose to live in our areas.
Yeah.
So, like, go ahead, Dinesh Douchebag, or however you pronounce it. Like, go ahead, man. What do you give to the economy? Like, you're the dude who went to prison because you weren't smart enough to friggin' figure out a way to have a friend of yours give a campaign contribution.
Yeah.
And you paid them back publicly. You're the guy that was the president of a Christian college and showed up to conferences at this Christian college introducing a woman as your wife who wasn't your wife. Like, I would know not to do that at a Christian college.
Right.
But you can figure that out.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to pull out of the economy? Go right ahead, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really scared of it.
Okay, we'll get back to our conversation with Cliff here in just a second, but there's never been a more important time to have a supply of reliable respirator face masks. From increasing group events to school reopenings to the rise in COVID in the United States right now, wearing a face mask is the first line of defense against getting sick. The director of the CDC testified under oath before Congress that wearing a face mask is more important than getting a vaccine when it comes to reducing the spread of COVID in our country. Until that vaccine vaccine comes out, you got to have a mask. And only respirator face masks provide medical grade protection, and only FDA authorized respirator masks provide the quality required. The NewDealShop.com has FDA authorized respirator masks ready to ship now, and every pouch comes with verifiable anti-fraud labeling, so you know they work. Trust the mask medical professionals are using. Go to TheNewDealShop.com and get FDA authorized U.S. tested respirator face masks now with free immediate shipping for my listeners. Bulk pricing is also available too, so you can get the masks you need affordably and quickly. Keep yourself, keep your family safer and healthier this fall. That's TheNewDealShop.com. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
Do you think we should change how we visualize an electoral map, how we visualize the results of an election on a map of the United States? Because there is still this constant issue where I think a lot of people in those Midwestern states, especially some of the states where no one really lives, where a majority of the landmass is just dirt and sand.
Where cows outnumber people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seems to me, and there's obviously been some experimentation along these lines for years. I've seen these kind of maps, kind of distorted looking maps going back to 2004. But it seems to me as if the cable news networks, the broadcast networks, need to change up how they visualize the results of an election, because I think it's giving a false impression of where the people are.
Yeah. I think land equals people. No, you're entirely right. There was something, I want to say it was a French news organization, and it was on Twitter maybe a week ago. A week ago, right after the election or, you know, something like that. They did it in this really cool way where they showed like a round dot for every electoral vote in each of the states.
Yeah.
And they showed them as blue or red. So you could see in each state how many, you know, get an idea of how many people we were talking about. It didn't matter how big the landmass was. You know, if it was Montana, there were three dots. You know what I mean? And if it was California, there were 55. And that gives you the idea of what it is we're talking about. Something like that. You know, you don't have to distort. I mean, you can. That's another way to do it. But I don't think that's even necessary. I think the way this French company or news organization did it was the way it should be done.
Right.
And I think it would give people some real perspective, you know, in terms of what we're looking at.
Do you think we can now rabbit season, duck season the Republicans into supporting the abolishing of the Electoral College now that they've been screwed by the Electoral College? Not the way we've been screwed by winning the popular vote, but losing the Electoral College. But now they've lost the Electoral College in a way that is probably pissing them off right about now. But they're afraid to go there because of what happened in 2016. But do you think at some point we can now get them on board to say, look, this is an arcane system. We don't need it anymore. It's ineffective. It's from a different time, a different mindset in this country, and we can just go to a national popular vote. Do you think we can get their support on that at least, or are they just going to indiscriminately just say the opposite of whatever it is we say, irrespective of whether it's consistent?
I think eventually we can. I was hoping for obvious reasons, for the landslide it would produce to win Texas this time. But I also was hoping for Texas for that reason. And you know, they may still delude themselves. I think what was Texas in the end, about a 5-point difference?
Yeah, it was
or
tight.
So something. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like it was before. And I think you're at the point now where, in the end, once they're done counting all the provisional ballots, they may only win North Carolina by 25 or 30,000 votes.
Wow.
North Carolina certainly is no longer safe for them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Georgia ain't safe for them. Texas has gotten this close now, and they don't even go into – they did well in Ohio. They did well in Florida. But even going into elections, those two are not guarantees for them. So you're now at a point where we start an election yawning with California, New York, Illinois, and New Jersey. And maybe I'm even missing some other big states in our back pocket.
Virginia,
we know we have them.
Yeah.
Virginia, right. I mean, like, we know they're ours.
Yeah.
They're at a point now where the biggest state they start off with a guarantee of winning is 11 electoral votes, Tennessee and Indiana, also 11. That might convince them to change when we start off with California and New York and the places we start off with. Because once they can legitimately lose Texas, and even Republicans who are saying, you know, this time they didn't think that we would win Texas. They were saying, but the improvements that have been made, it will never again be a safe Republican state.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a swing state. And Well, you know, you want to start off in that position. That's kind of a nice position for us to start off in. So, yes, I do think some of them will suddenly find Jesus on that one and at least start talking about, you know, how to reform the system. But, I mean, you know, there's also the other side of it, which is they can't win the popular vote. They really need to change their party and what they stand for and sort of stop being in 1880. And then they'll have a chance to win. And you know, I think generationally that may take 10 or 20 years. Because they're just now they've so propagandized their oldest adherents, you know, into thinking all these crazy things about race and gender and whatever and other and vast conspiracies, that how do you unring that bell and try to move to the middle and still keep those voters? It's a pretty tough thing to manage. And maybe they can. Sadly, it seems Susan Collins managed it in Maine somehow. So it's obviously not impossible to manage. But it gets tougher for them. So we'll have to see what they choose there.
What was really fascinating to me is that Florida is not nearly as relevant anymore as it used to be. Now, since the Democrats created this solid blue state in Virginia, it seems to make it less necessary to win Florida. And if Texas finally flips, maybe by 2028, 2032, somewhere around there, then suddenly Florida is kind of just off the map as far as being a swing state. I don't mean to offend anyone who's listening in Florida, who's a Florida resident who fights hard for the Democratic Party. But I mean,
you know,
just
you come from an absolutely bonkers fucking state.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just a hot mess.
I will make you guys in Florida feel better. We're irrelevant too.
Yeah.
I was hoping Ohio would go blue because that would keep Ohio relevant. The two preeminent swing states, you know, for 20 to 25 years now have been Ohio and in Florida, and this election rendered both of them meaningless. They're meaningful to Republicans. Mm-hmm. Republicans need them and keep coming here, but the Democratic Party doesn't need them.
Yeah.
I mean, once Colorado and Virginia are barely, if at all, swing states anymore, they're pretty much solid blue states at this point. And on top of that, you've now added to Michigan and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, some of these other ones. You've added Arizona. You've added, you know, Georgia. You've added North Carolina. You know, you've added Texas, which is increasingly not quite there, but getting there. Florida Florida and Ohio just don't matter anymore if you're in the Democratic Party. I mean, I hate to say it because I live here and I want them to spend their dollars here, you know, and I want them. But I mean, we've got to be honest.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, Florida and Ohio, I don't think they're just not going to be the same in terms of importance anymore.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about, Cliff, is just north of Florida, we have the great state of Georgia. And today, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution released the first poll for the runoff elections there, the Senate runoff. And in what they're calling Senate Race A, Perdue is leading Ossoff by 4 points, 50 to 46, undecided right now. It happens to be 4 points. So again, my theory, register voters and get them to the goddamn polls, Democrats.
It's going to be close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bring that fucker down by reminding people that Loeffler wasn't the only one that insider traded on the knowledge of COVID. So did Perdue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we emphasize that. Yes, go after them both on taking away health care, on pre-existing conditions, but also go after them on the insider trading stuff.
That's right. Mitch McConnell, too, saying that he's going to block Joe Biden's nominees for his cabinet is probably good motivation to get Democrats out to vote. I think if Mitch McConnell is one of the best drivers of Democratic turnout in the history of the Republican Party, thanks, Mitch McConnell. Meanwhile,
an ugly turtle mug on ads, you know, quite frankly.
Meanwhile, in the Loeffler-Warnock race, Loeffler's winning 49 to 48. So it's a 1 point race in the polls in Senate race B, runoff B. Undecided is 3%. So that particular one is just tantalizingly close. I think these are winnable. What do you think? I mean, do you think that these are winnable races for Warnock and Ossoff?
This should be treated like a presidential election. We got 2 months, you know, and I think they're both absolutely winnable. They each control the other's fate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not at cross purposes. You're working at turn folks out. If I had to pick, I'd say because Loeffler doesn't have the name recognition, you know, Perdue, he has the most Southern named cousin in the history of the world. Yeah. Sonny is his cousin, who was the governor and secretary of agriculture now under Trump. And so, I mean, Perdue is a more famous political name in Georgia. Perdue is an incumbent in that he won election. So he's in a stronger position. There's no doubt. I think we will win the Warnock race. Mm. I'll say right now. The other one I think I'm more worried about. I think we can win it, but I think the other one we're really going to have to go just all out and run a terrific campaign, and I think we can win them both, which is what we need to do.
Yeah, and I want to add that anyone who's concerned about the Lincoln Project suddenly turning and becoming pro-Republican, they're going to be pumping a lot of ads and a lot of money into these runoff campaigns in support of the Democrats. So just so you know, this doesn't have anything to do necessarily with Donald Trump in Georgia. So the fact that I think the Lincoln Project is getting involved in there, I think... That's a good sign. That's a very good sign for the future of that particular faction of the party, right?
I would agree 100%. You know, they said they're gonna go after all of the enablers, the collaborators, the Vichy Republicans, and that's what they're doing. And I'm very happy they are doing that.
Well, speaking of collaborators, holy shit, Cliff Schechter. I was amazed to be scrolling through Twitter the other day and to notice a video from Fox News Channel featuring someone from your past. Cleta Mitchell somehow was not shamed out of television after you destroyed her on MSNBC back in 2006. Cleta Mitchell is still around, and are you going to dust off your cable news camera?
Should I challenge her?
Yeah, yes.
Should I challenge her to... Honestly, that was one of the best TV moments, probably the best TV moment, let's be honest, I ever had. It was so much fun. Afterwards, it was like almost what I said to her came to me via osmosis. It just kept coming, what to say to her. And, you know, it went a little bit viral in an era pre-Twitter. It was 2006, I believe, and really when Facebook was in its infancy, so it didn't go as viral as it probably would today. But I appreciate your sending that out, Bob, and sharing it with a whole new generation of people. A bunch of people ended up following me after that and being like, oh my God, congratulations. So thank you. no, I mean, look, I try to be humble. I'm not the greatest thing in the world, but I'm not going to lie and claim I'm not proud of that moment. That was one of my happiest moments ever on television, and it was fun. So good to see Cleta again. I hope we'll get to discuss things in another kind discussion. TV, podcast, I'll do it anywhere Cleta wants to go. I will have a conversation with her.
Yeah.
Relive, you know, it's like a college or high school quarterback going back and wanting to replay the game.
Right.
Well, I want to go relive my best moment.
Well, your only mistake is calling it a conversation, man. You steamrolled her. I mean, that was just a full juggernaut. Not only your best moment, but maybe one of the great moments in the history of cable news so far, of just someone getting absolutely destroyed. So well done, my friend.
Thank you. I will always hold that appearance close to my heart, Bob.
Cliff Schechter, the show is called The Unprecedented Podcast with you and John Aravosis. That is on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, sexyliberal.com, your podcast superstation. Make sure to subscribe and give a 5-star rating and reviews to all of the shows on the entire network. So thank you for doing that. Cliff, it was such a pleasure to talk to you again, my friend, and we'll see you next time.
Always my pleasure, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy. Bye-bye. The season of giving thanks is upon us right now. The special day of turkey, family, and football will be here before you know it. Before gathering with your family to share in your Thanksgiving traditions, it's important to allow some extra time for you, the time you need to take care of yourself and to look your best for your loved ones. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes, visibly reduced wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in just a matter of minutes. Plexiderm even works on laugh lines too. Numbers 11 and crow's feet take 10 years off your appearance in less than 10 minutes. We are talking about Photoshop in a can. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say the code sexyliberal. This order also comes with free shipping and a 30-day money-back guarantee in case you don't like it. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com/sexyliberal or call 800-685-1292 and say the code sexyliberal at checkout. Thank you.